Collective bargaining, September 7th, 2016.
Thank you. Here are the minutes. Looks fine to me.
So good to us? Looks good to us.
Okay, minutes are good. We have a 3, an 8, a 23, and a 24 for today.
I think that's everything.
That's all the
whole. The 3 is not.
Yeah. And what I'd like to do is start with 8.
Okay.
One of the things that some of the things that you articulated at the end of the last session for Article 8 we've picked up, some of the things we have not, and we can explain why. 8.1c, we see spousal as being the broad term now, particularly that that encompasses all types of marriages. But domestic partner, we're concerned about adding that as a term of art in the contract because it's kind of a category that has been largely eliminated in its former purpose, which is really for insurance purposes. Certainly, you know, the theory is that we're going to consider, we are supportive of the trailing spouse, but we're not suggesting that we're going to not consider someone's domestic partner for a hire, but we are hesitant to add that to the language of Article 8. What's next? The next thing has to do with summary, right?
Just a small thing. We added the language you wanted. 8.3P, I think. We just added the copy may also be found at HTTP, we add the link for the bargaining.
Okay.
Small thing.
I guess the next is at 8.8, we have removed the language with regard to the fall extended semester may continue through winter break. And
On the supplemental summer, 8.6C, where you had wanted that language struck, saying that it was didn't serve any particular purpose as far as you were concerned, because faculty already know that. I understand that concern, but it's something the provost feels very strongly about. It doesn't hurt anything to have it in there as far as, you know, we make it very clear that you're not obligated to perform any kind of duty during the summer, but it's just something he feels particularly strong about and wants in there. So
that's language we've had on the table previously.
Mm-hmm.
Not obligated is when not on contract.
Yeah.
Is there any further explanation on as to why he's so committed to that particular phrase, considering we see that it is redundant?
Because Provost feels very strongly that even though faculty are not required, we can't require faculty to do anything in the summer if they're not on contract, that it is, from his perspective, he would hope that faculty would choose as professionals to continue to do work if they needed to support students that are required that they have. They're not, we can't make them. But he feels that that's part of their professional obligation to the.
And we know that some 9-month employees do.
And there's no obligation to pay employees for their work?
There's no obligation to pay them or to require them to do it.
Yeah, they're not being assigned work.
They're not being assigned work.
And there's
work.
No reason for it to be in the contract.
But we know that they do work of this nature.
Yep, that's fine. And it's addressed in other parts of the contract.
Well, I'm just telling you, he wants it in there. If that's a deal breaker for you, I'm sorry. But we've put in the part that you wanted that they're not required to.
The part we really want is for folks to be paid when they work for the university, period. End of sentence, end of concept.
I understand that.
Okay.
People can make choices.
Yes, they can. And one of them is to pay your employees when they do work for the institution.
And people can choose to do work for students that is uncompensated if that is their desire.
But this isn't work for students. This isn't teaching classes for the most part.
Well, supervising a lot of what's on here is actually helping students.
Then it should be compensated.
Well, I don't know about that, John, because look, if you look at the examples that we're given, that we're providing in this article, submitting an article for publication, submitting to a professional conference, supervising student scholarly work, writing letters or recommendations, I mean, I think that's something people might elect to do during the summer when they're not on an assignment for months. They're not going to stop writing an article or they're not going to miss a deadline on a grant proposal that they feel enhances themselves personally, but may also have a positive effect on the university or students. But that's the nature of the work, that when you do these types of activities, there may be secondary beneficiaries. But we're not talking about someone being assigned work or required to work, simply electing to do this to enhance their own professional standing. So we're not suggesting that somebody is obligated to do work for us and then not get paid.
Yeah. But at the end of that phrase, the part you left out is in addition to benefiting the university.
But the university
which should be which you should be compensated for.
Well, no, not necessarily. No, I don't think that's the case. I mean, there may be times in which a faculty member, by the nature of being a faculty member in the academy, is going to do something that will benefit the university. It might benefit their discipline. It might benefit the state. It might benefit the world, the citizens, you know, the community. It might benefit all sorts of people, including the university. I think the key is that we're not assigning you or requiring you to do it. It's something you are going to do for your own professional benefit that may have secondary positive impacts. That's all we're saying there. And we know people do it. And to leave it out might suggest that they shouldn't be doing it. But that's not how that works. There are people all throughout this university and every university that's doing that kind of activity. So we're not saying we want people to work for free. But we're saying that people do engage in activities during the summer when they're not assigned that may benefit students at the university.
So how do you differentiate between 12-month employees and 9-month employees who are doing the same thing during that summer months, but 12-month employees are being paid and 9-month employees are not?
Well, I would think that a 12-month employee is on a full assignment for 12 months of work being assigned that they're required to do, that the university directs them to do because the university is wants to gain a benefit from that effort. This is a professional individual that goes out on their own and engages in these kinds of activities when they're not assigned.
But removing that language does not prevent them from doing it.
But
what it does is, though, it insinuates you've got a nevertheless in there. And what that does is it starts to move us into the conversation of expectation.
I think nevertheless modifies the sentence before that, which
it
is
does.
That you're not required to do that, but
right.
you may still be professionally engaged.
Well, but we all understand that, and this is part of, you know, the sense of, you know, academic choices that we should all have. We make these choices, and most of us do work and help our students and what have you. But I think what our concerns are is that we're starting to put into writing an expectation. And that becomes a way to tag it, build on it, and continue a conversation where faculty should do work without being compensated for it. So the goal is for us to not to prevent us from doing that. Taking that language out does not prevent us from doing that. We are very capable to do so. So there is no benefit if the goal is to give faculty an opportunity to do this. There really is not a purpose for that language in there other than to start a conversation of faculty doing work without being compensated.
Well, I don't read it that way.
I understand. But if the goal is for faculty to be able to do what we do, which is we all advise students, we all do dissertation work, we're all in agreement that that is the faculty member's choice, but that does not need to be in the collective bargaining agreement between us and the university.
Exactly.
Well, we think it does.
I understand. We don't. So.
All right.
You understand that it can also be used. Part of our concern has been that it can be used as a form of pressure to for faculty who legitimately want to turn their attention elsewhere over the summer to their own research, being obligated to do administrative work, for instance, curriculum coordination or something of that nature, and saying, I don't want to do this, but then feeling like they might be pressured and they might suffer on their ASPs as a result of that. And if you include language like this, it opens that door for, you know, well, the CBA says you don't have to do it, but nevertheless.
Well, I mean, that's why.
Well, as I understand it, with working somebody like this this summer, the collective bargaining agreement allows for the possibility that somebody could claim, I did some voluntary work during the summer, and I can include that in my annual report. If I have no assignment, I don't report anything about the summons. So I don't see how that can be held against someone when there's no assignment.
Even if it's
because
not,
it's already, yeah. It's already spoken to elsewhere. It's in, I have to go back to find where it is. It's a long article. Article 10.1. Yeah, it's on page 42 if you've got the hard copy. Yeah, part G3, where it very clearly says an employee may report activities related to the areas of assignment that are performed during times when the employee is not compensated by the university. If reported on, these activities shall be evaluated. That's very straightforward.
Let's say that again, John. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just reading. An employee may report activities related to the areas of assignment that are performed during times when the employee is not compensated by the university. If reported upon, these activities shall be evaluated.
Right,
so that's
right.
That's know, common practice. We already have it. It's in a different article.
Right, but as I understand, you've asked us to put in a strongly worded affirmative statement in the contract that states that when there's not a supplemental summer appointment, there's no obligation to perform any duty or activity to the university. And we're willing to do that with a following recognition that there are people who are going to engage in some kind of professional enhancement activities that, in accordance with the provision that you just read, can be reported for the purposes of trying to improve but not detract from their evaluation.
But having the language in there will not change that whatsoever. I mean, it just, what you've explained is the goal, right, is for faculty to be able to do that. There is nothing without this language in here that prevents us from doing it. But, so the language is unnecessary. And I think to keep a contract moving forward cleanly and clearly, why put language in there that's not going to accomplish anything other than what's already acknowledged as what the goal is? It's not going to change anything.
Well, we could have just as easily taken the position that the language that you propose does not have to be in the contract.
Sure. But the language that's proposed in the that we proposed has to do with us not having to work without being compensated. So that's relevant to us.
And this is relevant to us.
Okay. Because you think that the language is not included in it, we will have faculty that say they cannot direct dissertations. We will have faculty that will say they cannot direct theses and what have you. Is that what the argument is, right?
No, the argument is to be clear that we agree with the statement that without a supplemental summer assignment, you're not obligated to perform duties. But we also know that some perform some professional functions during this time period. It's just, we're just stating the fact, mm-hmm. not half the fact, but the fact.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want. It's complete. It's not just halfway there.
Mm-hmm.
So you were just referencing 10.1, essentially.
Right.
So maybe we can just clean up the language and say reference 10.1.
That's what I'm thinking. We've got a lot of work to do today, so why don't we move forward
on.
And we can suggest some other, we're sort of, I think we both understand each other's position?
Yeah.
So it's a matter of getting the language to work.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything else in Article 8 that had changed?
You referenced 8.8. We did it. We crossed out the fall extended semester. We picked up your idea that would impinge on a paid holiday, assuming that we continue to get paid holidays.
This is 23.
Okay, can I just ask a quick question about 8.8C,
mm-hmm.
Where the spring extended semester may continue until 3 days before the start of classes.
Mm-hmm.
Was there some reason for choosing 3 days? I mean, is there a landmark there or something?
No. It could have just said before the start of the semester. The point that our issue is that if you have somebody who is on a summer contract, actually, that contract starts before classes actually start. And so if they are doing an extended spring and they also are on summer contract, they could end up being paid twice. And we don't want to double pay people. So, you know, we just said, well, but if, you know, we can take out the 3 days, we just said, doesn't, just sometime before that start of classes, that seemed like a reasonable number of times.
Okay.
But if you want to change it to something else, that's fine too.
Did you bring it in, Sam?
No, I think that was the last one.
What we provided is in Article 23 on salaries. The number that's changed on the first page from what we provided before is the one-time payment, which we are offering at $950. That's at 23.4B.
Which actually is not equal to the prorated across-the-board salary increase for, it includes not just the across-the-board salary increase, because that would have been even less than the 600. It is the total 2.5%, the prorated amount.
Okay, understood.
On the next page, in 23.5, the final approval for the awards will be with the provost or designee.
Yeah, we had talked about this quite a bit last time. This is on page 4, line 158, roughly. We'd gone back and forth about whether if you didn't have enough applicants or the committee didn't feel like you had enough qualified applicants in a particular college, that you could flip it for a year in that college. And we, you know, we were like, well, it's 6 1/2 things, whether should we do it this way or that way? So we said, I think, because I went back and listened to the tape, for a couple of years, let's try it and see how this works at the college level for just that one instance. And then the normal, what we would consider recycles when somebody leaves or retires or whatever, get sent back into the central pool.
An experiment.
And it's an experiment. Hey.
I personally like experiments.
Yeah, well, being a scientist, I would expect you would. So.
Well, and this article is bargained again next year, so if we've made some blatant mistake implementing it.
Yes.
Charlie.
Our ray of sunshine.
I'm noting that you said it with a big smile. So one question on, well, we're on the subject of things that we've gone around and around and around about with the incentive awards and the tips.
Mm-hmm.
We still have this problem where some units are being disadvantaged by the current productivity criteria just because of they've been reorganized, and SVAD is the one we've talked about a lot. Is there any reason not to include some change in those criteria to address that issue? Because we're trying to incentivize. I mean, we've talked about this a lot.
We've talked about it.
Yeah,
I understand. I mean, what the people from SVET or people from Arts and Humanities will tell you is that some of those people in SVET, and it's a small group, but like the art group, that they actually do have the opportunity to teach occasionally, you know, if they choose to, like introduction art history or whatever, so that they don't have to be disadvantaged always. So, you know, I'm not in that college, I don't know, but, you know, that's something that, as you said, we could maybe look at it again next year, but we've made a lot of changes in these programs this year. I think this is about as far as we're going to be able to go this time around, just put it that way. I'm not closing the door to that.
But you're open to considering it.
I'm open to.
It's not a de, there's not some reason why it's a de facto brick wall.
It's not a de facto brick wall if we can find a way to make it work, yeah. I think it's a brick wall for this round of bargaining. We need to get this closed out, but.
Agreed.
Yeah, but, you know, we're always open.
Okay, good.
On to Article 24. What we're proposing on Article 24, first change is that we will provide retirees. First off, we spoke last time about the fact that we have a plan to robustly assist university faculty that are about to retire and how they can best have their emails forwarded. Through notifications and other means to communicate the change, that we would then sponsor an email address, although it would not be an active employee's email address, but we would continue to forward any emails that came to their former active employee email address for 6 months.
Okay, so we had another question about that particular element.
Okay.
So consider folks who enter the drop program or phased mm-hmm. retirement. So for the purposes of the state, it's my understanding that they're considered retired. Even though they're still on contract, they're still performing normal duties. So in this particular clause, are we excluding those folks from this? So do we need, or do we need to specifically add, this does not include folks who are entered in the drop and phased retirement programs? Because they're going to be actively teaching, they're still
true.
Doing research assignments.
Well, you might have someone who comes back in an entirely different way. I think Dave Kuhn came back and he worked in faculty relations for a while, for instance. So he had to have a UCF ID while he was performing work for the university. So it only seems reasonable that we would
be able to provide it.
Because OPS employees have university IDs. I mean,
yeah, so people that are in drop, because they're, by definition, they're still working.
Right.
And phase yeah. as well.
And phase as well. And so that's why I'm wondering, do we need to put that language in here? Will folks understand that?
I think they would understand that. I mean, but, you know.
We need to be able to carry out our business, so it would be harm to the university to not have them have a university
yeah.
email.
And
they're performing duties. They're on a different kind of contract, but they're still on contract.
Yeah. They're
okay.
still getting a paycheck from us. For working, they would be excluded from that.
I think it's pretty clear because, you know, in the statute, someone who retires are no performing no compensated duties in the statute, because that triggers that time period where they cannot come back and take compensated work. So I think they've defined retired now as a separation. In an absence of any compensated work, which is what our intent is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
understood.
As long as you're
understood.
And you know, I know that there's some sort of legal technicality about being retired, when you go in to drop it, I think actually you can undrop. Right?
No, I don't know about that.
I don't know.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah. You can undrop.
You can undrop
if you start paying back mm-hmm. the money that should have been deducted.
Right.
So that's why I considered it not a possibility.
I know where people in a university will undrop the day before their retirement date.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's not what I plan to do. just
throwing
that out there.
Me either. All right, so we know Charlie's thinking.
Okay. The next thing, John, is we're trying to address the language having to do with the diminution of any retirement benefits that you proposed in 24.5. And the language that we are suggesting is that if there is a change in statutes or regulations that would decrease benefits for employees, the parties would enter into immediate negotiations to address the change.
Could I ask, could we back up the email? I have one more.
Sure, very fine.
It's 24.4.9.
Uh-huh.
The university shall afford for 6 months. I would offer 12 months in order to capture an entire academic year instead of just the 6 months. Because you have some faculty, staff, students who only participate, let's say, one semester of a year.
Yeah, but you're discounting the time before they retire that we start the transition. The transition doesn't start the day you retire. The transition starts 6 months before you retire. So it really does, I think, capture that.
Say that again, Charles.
The transition starts before you retire. That's when we help people start migrating their accounts. It's an active service that they're providing.
So, yeah, 6 months out from before you retire, they start migrating your whole
account. Or whenever, I guess.
Yeah, whenever. I mean, you can
choose,
but
it's going to Knight's Mail.
Well,
no,
I decided that.
It won't go to Knight's Mail because you guys said you didn't really want to go to Knight's Mail, so we said we would create a separate, like, retiree account, like retired at UCF or whatever.
Golden Knights or something.
Golden Knights, yeah. Because a lot of people objected to the Knight's Mail thinking
that's
that it was too associated with students. So, yeah, you get your own retiree account.
I just realized you were saying Knights instead of Nice Mail. I thought you were saying Nice Mail. But what if you're not saying something nice?
That's okay, too.
You still get to use it.
I have a question just related to, you know, just general sort of workings of the university. I know at my last institution, students could petition grades or ask for additional sort of information on grades. We're required to keep our grades for, I think, 12 months here as well. General rule of thumb, not sure. Is it longer? It was 12 months in my last institution. So I could still receive grade petitions where I would be required to respond to students wanting to wipe their grade or something like that and had to provide information to the university for that purpose. Is that the case here where students, if you're teaching a class, that students still have a window to challenge grades, petition grades, and then you'd be requested, information would be requested of you.
Yeah, if the faculty members don't want to go to the chair, but the request could be made for up to a year.
But it goes to the chair if the faculty members left the university, right?
Well, the student would have to know how to do that mm-hmm. as well. It wouldn't automatically go.
Well, the second stage in the golden rule is to go to the chair. So if you couldn't get a hold of the faculty member, that is the next mm-hmm. step.
So, Nick,
the point is this: they should probably might actually need for university business might need that for the students' sake need that email for a year
because they may have business.
Yeah, because students can still talk to them about their grades for a year after. But if the 6 month forwarding ends after 6 months and a student wants to do it 6 months in one day, they're going to get bounced back.
Right. The next step would be to come to the chair, and the chair would be able to. That's what I'm confused about.
Right, it seems like, yeah, students know that process and think to go to that second step. Just wondering if you're closing down the window for students 6 months early.
Yeah, it does seem like a year is, at least a year, is more reasonable. I mean, for a lot of reasons.
Do we change grades 8 months out?
They have 1 year to petition.
If they have authority to, yeah.
Students have up to 1 year to appeal a grade. So they could, let's say they appeal at that 364-day mark.
So when somebody dies, what do? We just send a note to heaven? If somebody dies, the chair handles it, right? But we can't, I think we just had a discussion. Someone who's retired, we can't force them to work. So.
But they have the option to volunteer to work.
The golden rule requires that you have 1 semester beyond the semester where you got the grade. What the state says is that you should keep it for 1 extra semester, and then we keep it for another semester just to have extra. So that's where the 1 year comes from. So the requirement is, though, the golden rule says 1 semester.
Okay.
Sometimes, though, that summer could be the next semester, and that's why it gets into why we say keep it beyond it.
Okay. Well, we can talk about that.
I guess the next change, the next section to direct your attention to, unless I'm passing something by that needs to be discussed, is the university courses at 24.7, and really what we're striking the reference to the UCF regulation, and what we're doing is we're offering.
We picked up the language right out of the regulation.
But we picked up the language of the regulation, and we still are committed to the MOU, right?
Mm-hmm. And Bonnie tells me that the language that she is taking to the Board of Trustees, she got pre-approved by the BOG staff, so that will go before the Board of Trustees at their next meeting, which I believe is in September, and since they passed it once before, there's no reason to believe they won't pass it again. So that will hopefully go into effect for spring.
I think we provided the MOU last time.
Yeah, no need to do it again.
Is there a specific reason why, is the MOU attached to the contract? Or is this union business that should go to Scott? Just wondering.
Well,
it would be part of the contract.
Part of the contract? And is there a reason for an MOU if we're actually putting it into the contract?
Because we could ratify this before the spring semester, so then it's part of the contract.
Well, the MOU says it's contingent upon getting approval of the board. We're assuming that the board will do that.
The Board of Trustees or the BOG?
The Board of Trustees. Well, BOG and the Board of Trustees. But you know, there's always, we never know. We got a nasty surprise last time. So,
excuse me, I did not see the section about the transport credit for the firms or the media companies.
That's because we put that in a separate document
okay.
that we put at the table, we gave at the table last time.
Mm-hmm.
If it passes before this goes out for ratification, I suppose we could add that language to the contract.
Just roll it in.
Just roll
right.
it in.
That would be a lot simpler, wouldn't it? And it's only one vote, and it's in the contract as opposed to being in the end, placed somewhere else as an addendum.
You would rather have it in the contract, body of the contract?
I think so. Wouldn't we rather always have it in the contract as opposed to somewhere else?
As opposed to an appendix?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
Sure.
And then here's.
Okay, so one more quick
sure,
question.
Go ahead, mm-hmm.
And again, we've talked about this quite a bit, and so I'm mostly trying to figure out what the rationale is.
Okay.
So one of the one of the big reasons to provide tuition benefits of some sort to dependents of faculty members is for retention and recruitment. And it seems as if membership in the tuition exchange is an easy way to get a larger benefit at almost no cost. So joining the tuition exchange is really inexpensive, and the requirements of the program aren't that onerous, especially for a place like UCF. So is there some rationale for not including that element in? It seems like that would especially increase our ability to retain faculty and to recruit faculty from elsewhere where they do have that benefit. So I think certainly the majority of private institutions belong to this. My recollection is it's the vast majority, like 3/4 or even 90%.
They may. There are only two in the state. There are only two state universities that do, which is North Florida and Florida. And Florida wants to get out of it, quite honestly, because they find it to be a tremendous headache. And
but a headache in what manner?
It's a real administrative issue for them, and I'm not even sure do they offer it to faculty or just to...
I want to say it's for the children. There's a lottery, maybe?
There's a lottery, I think, for them. I don't think they even offer it to the entire faculty. I think it's just a lottery system where some people can get it if you... get it or
yeah,
not
their
get
benefits
it.
Are hard to figure out. It's
their
hard
benefits
to
are
obtain
really
it from outside.
You're telling me.
Yeah. Like
you're telling me how to negotiate them.
Well, not only that, we want
to
better
in every
way. Yeah, because they end up, yeah. More people want to go to the privates than want to come to the publics, which is the problem. So you don't, it's hard to get a balance.
So they're having difficulty getting a balance at Florida. Wow. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
But there's no other philosophical reason or...
No,
or any other reason?
You know, we kind of have the view that we want to see how this works and see how widely utilized it is. And then maybe we'll think about, you know, expanding it in some way. But we want to try it. You know, we're conservative. You guys are always, you know, wanting to go. We've had this conversation.
And
we're going to leave and other things. You know, we want to start small and see how it works, and then see. Then we can expand before we go whole hog, and then have to pull back because it's a lot harder to pull back than it is to expand. As you well know, once you get something in a contract, it is almost impossible to get it out, for good or ill, for either side.
Are we going to discuss that?
Yeah, in caucus, yeah.
Are you ready for caucus?
Oh. You have one more for us, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, this didn't change.
This is the same.
Okay.
No changes to 3.
That was just there in case there was something like it.
Caucus?
Is there 2 there?
Yeah, there's 2 there. Yes, we need to have a signing party, Charlie. As soon as possible.
So this is just...
Okay. Well, we'll let you have a caucus. And we will be across the hall?
I guess so.
Well, we're probably going to be a while.
That's fine. We can go across the hall, back to my office, wherever.
So we'll just roll through those?
Sure.
Okay. So in Article 8.8, Section C, so this is the lines 226 through 228. Wait, do I have this? No, I'm on an older version. I grabbed the wrong one.
Here.
So, give you back.
We're at 8.8C.
8.8C.
Okay.
No, it looks like the numbers got chopped off, maybe. Or no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's showing as 78 to 80.
Yeah.
We're still not exactly sure when this situation occurs. What's the...
What is extended?
What's the extended spring semester? What situation is it addressing?
Couldn't find it on the UCF's website at all.
Well, as I understand, sometimes faculty will take people on, like they'll maybe they'll do some, I don't know, I don't even know.
Ross,
Ross, help us out.
I don't do the ones that go extended semester, if that's, that's what you're asking.
But you know what it is.
Right, but there are some faculty who will take students abroad or supervise students that are abroad, that the semester is different. So it'll be either like their time period would be at the end of the semester and go past the final exam date, or they may be staying at another school and they're supervising them. The faculty member's not with them, but they're supervising someone who's in another country, and the academic year is different, so that there's some overlap there. So this must
be quite rare.
I would not say it's a normal thing, okay, but it's occasional. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll have to discuss that one quickly among our group. And then in article, or line 99 of that,
mm-hmm,
same section, where the words "be eligible to," we suggest striking that out because it just causes confusion. You know, the employee shall receive a stipend if they're meeting those responsibilities.
Well, they're allowed to volunteer, right? In which case they wouldn't receive it.
Yeah, but I think that's in a different section.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a different section.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying that if you are going to volunteer,
did we change that?
And not be paid, then be eligible to means that you have the option to refuse it. Otherwise, we would have to pay it whether they want it or not.
Yeah, although our current language says they shall receive, so I don't know why we added shall be eligible to.
Yeah, and we're suggesting
just
with the original language.
Yeah, the original language seemed to work.
So they wouldn't be able to waive it?
Well, they can waive.
No, they won't be able to if we take that out.
Anything.
Right? Where's the waiver?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right, yeah. Thank you.
Confirm the language.
Yeah.
I think the intent was always that if you were going to...
Oh, here we are.
Just
five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so we're good on that.
Okay.
Yeah, so actually then in going back, reversing course for a bit.
Just to make sure that I understand, you're saying that if you strike be eligible to, they still shall be able to be eligible to waive that payment. It's talking about in five, where you say you can volunteer in writing to opt out of receiving any summer supplemental compensation. So therefore,
the reason I think that
be eligible to is more clear is because it works with five. But if you're saying that five will supersede three, then I can live with that.
Well, it's the current language we have.
But do you understand what I'm saying? As
mm-hmm.
long as it
yeah.
still permits them to waive the payment.
Yeah, it's not contradicting it.
Okay,
another part of the language.
Okay, I just want to make sure I had that very,
right?
Very clear.
Yeah. So in 8.6C, Mike, the language that you brought in is acceptable to us. I just want to make sure that,
that we stated
that. Yes, that was a quick resolution. It saved us some wordsmithing.
Just
for the record.
Just so that we understand. What, Sherry, what What were we good with the first sentence?
Yeah, we, there's a period after during the summer when an employee is not provided supplementary summer employment. Employee is not obligated to perform any normal duty or activity for the university during the summer period.
Okay, good.
And then the rest of it's dropped.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay. In Article 23, the most substantive thing from our perspective is maintaining the number of SOTLs at 10 per year, because then that keeps the total number of awards at 120.
Oh, I'm sorry. That we just didn't pick that up.
99 and 100.
You just didn't realize that you still had it in there?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what, I'm sorry, where are we then?
We're keeping the SOTLs at 10 per year.
Okay, so we're not decreasing them?
No.
Okay.
Number three, that was page just 3 mine. Of 6, 99 and 100.
Yeah. And then we have to,
I missed that part of the
we have to do our due diligence and double check the numbers on the lump sum payment in lieu of retroactive. And also, yeah, that's, I think that's, is there another one that?
Well,
you know, because we have to ratify it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's 23. And then in Article 24 on benefits, for the reasons we mentioned about the sponsored email address, we think that would be really wise to extend that to automatic forwarding to 12 months.
Yeah.
And it, you know,
I emailed Joel, but I have not received a response yet.
Yeah. I mean, computer-wise, it's an easy change to make.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would...
And Scott Cole.
It'll help help faculty continue to service their students and not disrupt communications.
If there's an appeal or something of a
grade. We still need to see the exact language, or have the exact language that's, not the exact one. We need to have language about the tuition waiver benefit moved from the MOU into the contract itself.
Okay. With a couple more.
Yeah, and there's a couple of modifications that we'd like to see. One is making it definite, meaning that the benefit will begin, you know, with ratification of the contract. Because I think we have enough time between now and then to make sure that's, it'll pass the board and it'll pass the BOG.
Well, I mean, the benefit will become available whenever it's available, period. I mean, yes, it gets ratified, but then we got to get it, I mean, HR has to be able to get it up and running by, would we say spring? Is that what our target is now?
I think.
Yeah, I think it's more about there's some language in the MOU that wouldn't be appropriate for the contract, like the word contingent.
Oh, the contingent.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
That language.
Yeah,
okay.
That language. We'd also like to see the benefit extend beyond children in the narrow sense to dependents under the age of 26, because then that's going to include adopted children and adopted children, stepchildren, grandchildren, if the person is the provider for them. So it's that inclusivity that we've been talking about, that the provost talked about. And then
I think we had already agreed to that in principle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then with the tuition waiver benefit, making sure that it's clear in the language that that's includes both the tuition and the fees the same way it does for employees who are taking the courses on their own. Is that the extent of it?
Did you need to, or did you already cover that?
Yeah.
You've covered it. Good.
Yeah. That's good. Oh, and then Article 3.
There is one other part. I'm sorry.
No.
We haven't talked 24 yet. No, we haven't gone to. Did we get 24 done?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This part, adding that in there.
Okay, right. Yeah, and then, exactly. Yeah, so in Article 24.5, it's D. It's right above 24.6. It's the very last clause. What we'd like to see is basically two words inserted in there. So, shall enter into immediate good faith negotiations to address the change, just to reinforce that we're trying to come to a resolution, as opposed to just talking. And then in Article 3, we're proposing just maintaining the status quo, because the changes that you've made, one of them is redundant, and the other one, the last one, isn't really germane to that article. It's something that's included, you know, in AESPs and basically in AESPs, so it doesn't belong in there. It's not about the UFF. Responsibilities or privileges per se, but the additional work that faculty volunteer to do.
So, but you want to not the language that we added.
Yeah. So basically, just strike that last.
4 A and C.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. A, C, and I.
Because that's in Florida statutes already. I mean, we're well aware of it on our end.
Well, it looks like we're getting closer.
So how do we proceed from here? Do we want to exchange language before the next session again to try to wrap it up the next time?
What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay, yeah, see if we can wrap it up next time.
Yeah, that would be good, just to wrap it up.
Yeah, it would be good to wrap it up.
Yes, yeah. After.
We'd all be happy with that.
I mean, we're so close.
We're very close. We're very close.
Thank you all.
Great.
Okay, thanks. It was productive today.
Yeah.
Productive session.
It was a productive session.